suffer the most violence in prison. They also perpetrate a great deal of the violence. They're the most disruptive. They end up more frequently in solitary confinement, though there are now rules in place that are supposed to prevent inmates with mental illness going to solitary confinement. They're not always followed. In general, have a much harder time of the prison experience than somebody who is not suffering from some sort of a mental illness.
What has been the response of the state authorities to all these investigations? I mean, in the case of Dannemora, you have Governor Cuomo walking the block. Patrick mm-hmm. Alexander, he spoke to him.
Mm-hmm. Very little response, I think somewhat surprisingly to us. The Correction Department in both cases put out statements, almost identical statements for both articles, saying that they're working with the authorities to investigate and that anybody who is found guilty of wrongdoing would be punished. But beyond that, there have been very little details, very little accounts about what occurred.
We want to leave it there, but we'll continue to follow the story. Michael Schwartz, award-winning reporter over at the New York Times, and we'll link to his articles. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with your main show.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8 o'clock. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guests are Jean Damastis and Laura Wintergreen, and we'll be talking about affordable housing in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the African Hip Hop Caravan Benefit Show, August 29th. From 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup in Portland. All ages are welcome to this benefit show featuring Mike Crenshaw and Rashid Jamal to raise funds and awareness for their November trip to various countries in Africa. Again, that's a benefit show for the African Hip Hop Caravan on Saturday, August 29th from 3 to 6 p.m. at Columbia International Cup, 9022 North Newman Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Peace.
It's the HIP to the HOP, it's the movement. Hip Hop Caravan is the HIP to the HOP, it's the movement. Hip Hop Caravan.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Red Umbrella film series hosted by the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film My Own Private Idaho will be shown Sunday, August 30th at 7 p.m. Directed by Gus Van Sant, My Own Private Idaho adapts Shakespeare's Henry IV story to friends and hustlers living on the streets of Portland. Again, that's My Own Private Idaho at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're living in your own private Idaho. Living in your own private Idaho.
Looking for a career? KBOO is proud to be a co-sponsor of Oregon's 15th Annual Diversity Employment Day Career Fair. The fair will be held Wednesday, August 26th, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Ambridge Events Center, located at 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in Portland. Participants may interview with over 50 major employers who are recruiting for hundreds of positions. The career fair is sponsored by the DiversityRecruitersNetwork.org. Business attire is required and bring plenty of resumes. More information is available at citycareerfair.com or on the right-hand side of the KBOO homepage at kboo.fm.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. This morning, we're going to spend some quality time talking about affordable housing in Portland. And actually, what is affordable housing? Because we have actually not updated the federal standards for what an affordable housing has been. And what, Gene? You're going to tell me, you know.
I think when we say affordable housing, we mean that any family is paying about 30% of its income in rent, sometimes as much as 50%, but certainly no more than 50%. We know that if families have to pay more than 50% in rent, then there's not enough money left over for food, for clothing, for medical care, and other emergencies happen.
And so Jane just jumped right in. And I was actually just trying to get this one piece of nugget. Who you've just heard from is Jane DeMasters. She's the Executive Director of Human Solutions and has been a housing advocate for well over 30 years in this community. I'm also joined in the studio by Laura Wintergreen, who is the advocate for the East Portland Action Plan, which is a community-led effort that came together about 7 years ago.
Close. In February 2009 was when the action plan was adopted, and the group came together the following June.
And East Portland Action Plan committee members are a community-based organization, community residents, who came together out of a sense of frustration that they could not get policymakers in the city of Portland to address some of the longstanding issues in East Portland. And because we live east of 82nd, the assumption is that somehow, I guess, we're in Gresham or some other country because our city leaders just don't quite get out into this neighborhood. And so we're here today to talk about, I think we're at this crossroad here in Portland. But first, thank you both for being here this morning.
Thanks for inviting us.
I know morning people, some of you are not.
She's referring to me.
And so I appreciate you both being here. But I want to just jump right in because this is really an issue that's impacting every single person who lives in the city of Portland. And it's whether or not people can find a safe, affordable place to lay their heads at night. And Jean, you've got just this long wealth of information. What is the current state of affordable housing right now in the city of Portland?
In terms of affordable housing, the estimates are that as many as 25,000 people live, low-income people live in housing where they're paying more than 30% of their income in rent. And that means they're having to not have enough food to eat for their kids or not buy school supplies or not get medical care they need. 25,000 people in the city of Portland, that's a huge number of people that are having to make a sacrifice or are in situations where they could become homeless very easily.
Mm-hmm. And so you would call that housing insecure. They're on the brink.
They're on the brink, and we know that there's another 200 or more families that are, in fact, without housing. They're staying doubled up with other families, two families in an apartment meant for one family, or they're living in a camper or staying in a campground. They don't have any housing at all. They're homeless. They're a family. The kids are about to start back to school, but they have no place to live.
And we have an event that's going to take place on Saturday, August 29th. Laura, you want to tell us what that event is?
Yes. East Portland Action Plan members and subcommittees, basically working groups, decided they'd better look at what the options are for displacement prevention, for involuntary displacement prevention. They had tried for 5 years to get the powers that be to apply themselves creatively to address this issue. That wasn't happening. Basically, opportunity mapping and gentrification mapping said we don't have to think about East Portland, but we were encountering those families whose rents, one man on our committee, 33% over the last 4 years. We have others that were having to leave East Portland and move elsewhere. Some out of state because they simply can't afford the rent increases. Statistics now show rent is going up higher in East Portland. So the committee was looking at also living wage jobs. So we had our Brownfields Committee, our Civic Engagement Committee, our Housing and our Economic Development Subcommittee spend a year looking at what are the tools, what are the exact things you can do to prevent displacement. So we call it the Involuntary Displacement Prevention Action Toolkit for East Portland. They want to bring these recommendations out to the community. Mm-hmm. They know they're not experts. They did the very best they could. They spent a year doing research, reporting, dialogue amongst themselves, amongst each committee, came together with these recommendations. And we need you. We need people to come and review these. Because East Portland Action Plan has been very successful in the advocacy they're doing. Mm-hmm. They've gotten over $55 million worth of sidewalk and street improvements in the last 5 years. They know if they apply themselves to involuntary displacement prevention, they're going to be successful. They want to make sure they're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. So they need your input. They need people to come look at these recommendations, to critique it, to tell them, yes, this one makes sense, or you might want to make these adjustments, or, oh my gosh, don't do that. That's stupid.
Right. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So next Saturday, August 29th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at David Douglas High School, there will be a workshop, right?
It's a workshop. It's what's going to happen is people will come, Community Alliance of Tenants. We'll talk about what is involuntary displacement. There's some people don't understand. They say, well, if we make enough money and we want to move somewhere, why do you care? Mm-hmm. Actually, we don't. We don't. We're worried about those people who don't want to move but simply can't afford to live in East Portland any longer. Many of those people have been displaced from other parts of town. We're saying, don't do this again. Please help us to prevent it. And prevention doesn't cost as much.
Right.
You know,
right.
If we set up certain policies that are being recommended, that's a matter of function and procedure. It's not so much about having to put the very limited housing dollars into buying housing. So we have recommendations. We certainly would like more of those housing dollars given the numbers that Jean quoted. Mm-hmm. But we also said there are some structural, functional, systematic things, institutional things we can do if we can generate the will. And to generate the will, you know out there, KBOO listeners, it's a matter of us coming together and saying, you will. And that's what generates the public will to make changes.
And what a great opportunity. I'm just going to say it. Next year is an election year. We've got a majority of the city council that's up for re-election. Housing has got to be one of the biggest issues that are on most people's minds who have lived here for a decade or more, because you start seeing just how many areas of the city are now becoming inaccessible. When we talk about East Portland and the lack of political representation that we get, you did say that EPAP has been very successful, and it's been successful because folks have been putting pressure on the city council in an organized fashion, with many voices from the community represented to explain what the challenges are. But given that, I still feel like we're at a place where we're just not getting the kind of attention that we need. And so that's the reason for the community forum that's taking place. That's why we're talking about this today. What are some other things that people should know as they prepare to become advocates around affordable housing? Because what I've learned is that there are a lot of groups that are now paying attention to. There's a Facebook group called Stop Demolishing Portland. There are many, many other groups that are organizing around housing. So that's probably good news.
Right, some of the groups organizing around housing are really healthcare groups and hospitals, to say that people who are homeless have a much higher rate of using emergency rooms and causing higher healthcare costs. And conversely, when people are released from a hospital, if they don't have any place to live, they end up staying in the hospital longer. And when they are released, having a much higher incident of a problem with their healthcare because they can't stay as clean as they need to. They can't control temperature if they're actually living outside. So the hospitals are also interested in finding ways that homeless people can get into safe housing and take care of healthcare problems, particularly to drive down healthcare costs.
Right. And is there any plan to build affordable housing in a way that's different than the way we've built it in the past? I keep thinking of multi-generational housing, shared community space, right? Are we think is there a process now that's actually thinking about how do we build housing for the way people live as compared to the way we've always built housing?
I think there's a number of community groups that are looking at what are creative ways to build affordable housing, how can we build affordable housing faster, at a faster rate than we've been doing it before, and how can we build it at a cost that isn't so high, because we want to build more affordable housing as quickly as we can. So we have lots of different groups looking at it, but there is no way of getting around building housing is expensive. Whether we think it's going to be $100,000 a unit or $180,000 a unit, those are high numbers when you think about having thousands of units being needed. So we're looking to the state government, and we're very pleased that the state has allocated $60 million statewide for affordable housing. But we know that when $60 million gets distributed statewide, Multnomah County will get a share of that, and then East Portland will get an even smaller share of that. And we know that a percentage of that housing needs to go for people with disabilities, which is the right thing to do, but other families without disabilities will have a harder time getting a fair share of that. So we look to the state government, who has allocated funding, and the federal government, who needs to allocate more funding. The federal government is actually considering now reducing the amount of money that they're going to provide to HUD for low-income housing tax credits, and we need the federal government to increase the amount of money for low-income housing tax credits, not decrease it.
Well, and that's with East Portland, there's an assumption that we have a large amount of low-income by design housing. And actually, the co-chair of that's on the Housing Subcommittee of the East Portland Action Plan with Jean is Frida Christopher, and she is a board member of David Douglas. So hospitals and schools are invested. Mm-hmm. And she came in with the assumption that tax dollars are being taken because East Portland had a disproportionate amount of tax-abated housing. Mm-hmm. And so we said, prove it. Mm-hmm. And what I love about working with the people I get to work with, she worked it. Mm-hmm. She worked with Multnomah County, with planning and sustainability, got the numbers, and disproved her urban myth that East Portland had a disproportionate amount of public housing by design. We do not. We have less than North Portland. What we had was a market that allowed low-income people to be able to afford to live in East Portland. Mm-hmm. And as we have worked through the East Portland Action Plan to make improvements to the livability of the area, improvements that many people in Portland take for granted, and East Portland simply doesn't have a sidewalk,
right?
You know, doesn't have a park that actually has anything in it. As we make those improvements, the rents have been rising. Mm-hmm. We have families coming from the Somali community talking about, yes, they were given 3 months' notice, and that sounds reasonable, except they don't get their, they have to pay first, last, and security. They don't get that money back. They are going to have to go homeless before they can move into another home. And they are not finding anything affordable in East Portland anymore. So this is already happening now. Mm-hmm. When I took this job 6 years ago, I said, you have maybe 5 years, as long as the economic downturn remains, to start addressing, to get this addressed and to be working on involuntary displacement prevention. Our committee had to form by supporting the community and making it livable for everybody who's there. And all those, a high number of low-income people, we have schools that are 100% free and reduced lunch, and it's more than one school. We have schools that are well over 52% English language learners and coming from families with other languages. So there is a lot of need, and we focused on that, and now we're saying we had better jump in. We've been begging the powers that be to deal with the involuntary displacement, because these families deserve to stay in this area now that we're making it a little better to stay in. It's a beautiful area to live in. East Portland is a great place for families, and we have 40% of the students. So again, the schools are very invested. When I was working on a different program, Safe Routes to Schools, I encountered a principal who said she loved that she came to her school in David Douglas School District. And the teachers had already switched from pulling their hair out saying, oh my gosh, you know, the majority of our students, their families don't speak English, and they're here in kindergarten, but then they're gone, then they're back in second grade, then they're gone, to saying, okay, so how do we deal with that? Mm. Don't pull your hair out. That's our reality. What do we do?
Right.
And part of what you do is you try to stabilize the community so these students can have ongoing education and that we can continue to have children living in East Portland.
Right. Well, and I think the part of it is we're taxpayers in East Portland, right? We pay into the public.
We certainly do.
Yes, we pay big money into the public coffers, and we have some expectation that in return we will get some services. And so I'm thrilled that this community forum is going to be taking place on Saturday, August 29th. I will post it on my Facebook page at the conclusion of this program. David Douglas High School is located at 1001 Southeast 135th Avenue. We're going to go to the phone line. Hello, Joe. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. Your guests already spoke to some of the things that I thought I might ask about, so I'll just focus on the one thing that I haven't heard really spoken too much. So you've been talking about the need to prevent or mitigate involuntary displacement, and while rent control is a trickier issue than this, there doesn't appear to be any kind of state-level laws that prevent municipalities from regulating eviction, and specifically no-cause evictions, which are, you know, the number one cause of these involuntary displacements, I think. And I was wondering what strategies the city is looking at that incorporates a reform of evictions and how these actually kick people out of their homes. And I also wanted to put a plug in because I've been organizing around these issues more focused on renters' rights for the Portland Renters Assembly on August 26th, which is next Wednesday, and then a march for housing rights for all on Friday the 28th. There's information about that on KBOO's website, and I'll take the rest of my answer off the air.
And the event on the 26th is at Midland Library in East Portland, so we're very excited that it's preceding this event that we're holding on Saturday, August 29th at 10 a.m.
What a lot of people don't know is that landlords can evict tenants for no cause. They call it no cause eviction. Right. Landlord can give a tenant eviction notice saying it's a no cause eviction. You have 30 days to leave. Right. So many people think, oh, there has to be a for cause. There has to be something that the tenant did, and that's not true. And I think the caller is asking that we change the law so that landlords can't evict for no cause. There must be a lease violation to be able to evict. We can see even a neighbor at Humid Solutions, the landlord appears to be giving all of the tenants in the building a substantial rent increase and turning off the water outside of the apartment complex because all the tenants have gardens. And so if you turn off the outside water, the tenants aren't going to be able to tend to their gardens. But it would appear that one of the things the landlord is doing is hoping that the low-income tenants who live there now will leave and find other places to live. The thought is that the landlord may want to raise the rents or convert the property into middle-income housing instead of low-income housing. And so these tenants, they're not getting a no-cause eviction, but they're getting a rent increase and substantially more requirements to make it hard for them to live there. They will become displaced.
And the East Portland Action Plan, just so you asked what tools, and actually you mentioned two of our very first housing recommendations. One is rent stabilization. As I've said elsewhere, we're not control freaks. We just want to stabilize it now. So we're not rent control. It's called rent stabilization. And then another tool is just cause eviction with code enforcement and renter education. If a renter doesn't know that there's a tool available to them, they don't know how to use it. So we feel those three elements, the just cause eviction with code enforcement, again, if you don't have compliance, people do things, and then renter education.
And the caller did raise a really good point, which is and I'm hearing this a lot, right, that people are getting these 90-day notices and these no-cause, that their rent is being significantly increased and they're being given 30 days notice that their rent's going to be increased significantly, which is kind of like being evicted if your rent's going up a couple of hundred bucks and you can't afford to pay another couple of hundred bucks for rent. Are there legislative tools that should be implemented that would protect renters? I mean, where's the balance between a renter's right to, you know, not be displaced and then the owner of the properties right to make as much money as they possibly can on the property. So kind of where's that middle ground? And is there state tools that should help with that?
I think there aren't state tools right now. Right now, the state of Oregon has no-cause evictions. So that's what the state has and does not have any kind of rent stabilization. And so we're looking for the state to adopt tools like that to make housing much more stable, not only in Multnomah County where we are, but throughout the state. We know that in many parts of southern Oregon, there's a very high level of displacement from housing because people can't afford to pay the rent. So we'd like to have rent stabilization throughout the state, not just in Portland or just in Multnomah County. The other issue that we want to look at here in Portland in particular is we know that a lot of the housing in East Portland was built in the 1980s and has had very little repair done on it between 1980 and now 2015. And the housing has become run down. In some cases, there's mold in the housing. In some cases, there's infestations of bugs in the housing. And we want to make sure that we have a strong code in Multnomah County that requires that landlords fix those code violations, like having mold or having insects, and that they be fixed quickly so that low-income people have a safe place to live. We find that oftentimes the rents are low in some place because there is mold or it's unsanitary conditions, but that forces low-income people to live in a situation with a health hazard, and that should not be the case.
And that's why you need the rent stabilization along with the just cause eviction and the code enforcement, because only those two together. As we were looking at our tools, we saw that many of the tools do not work unless you have those two elements. We do have other tools that we're recommending, but if you don't have those, and to a degree we're saying just at the state level, legislative level, inclusionary zoning, rent control, we need to ask for local control so we can work in our local communities to get that. Right now, it's a statewide umbrella that says no. We're saying, who can be against local control? Let the local governments control it. Then we can advocate with local governments. It's so painful to see people's rent go up so fast. We have a state law that says you do not pay towards property tax more than 3% increase a year. Rent can go up 800% a year. There is no cap on it statewide. What I understand is the city of Portland did have an ordinance that said you could not raise rent over a certain amount. I believe it was less than 3% a year, but the state law trumps that.
Is there a difference between rent stabilization and rent control? And if so, what?
Not really.
No? Okay. Because I think we use those terms and I wasn't sure.
Essentially, we're saying we want to control rents in order to get rent stable for low-income people.
Okay. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Suzanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I have a question. So we've been talking about people possibly getting displaced from East Portland. Right. If people are being displaced from East Portland, where are they going to move to then?
They're moving to Gresham. They are moving
Vancouver.
To Vancouver. They are actually moving as far out as Sandy.
And Hillsborough as well.
I mean, right. I can say back before I started this job, people thought anything east of actually Cesar Chavez Way was like out there. Mm-hmm. It was that's mid-county, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, it had nothing to do with Portland, and people have worked to identify. Then it became 82nd. People understood that Portland went up to 82nd. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it goes up to 172nd. And there is that issue of that continues to be Portland and yet is designed and is not functioning by the general standards that the rest of Portland functions. So we've been left out. We've not been given the resources that other parts of the city have been given because we came into the city at a later date.
Right.
And it wasn't built on that assumption. But then it's like it's time to catch up. But as we make the improvements, unfortunately, what happens is it becomes more desirable. When I took my job 6 years ago, I said to people, manifest destiny, Portland is going to be growing into East Portland. We are not going to have to worry too much about livability improvements because as higher income people move out here, and we do want mid and higher income people in East Portland because livability improvements on some of those in commercial and for-profit, you have to have the discretionary funds. But we do not want to lose the people that we have living there now. So we want both. You can walk and talk at the same time and sometimes chew gum. We want all these things. And we believe the people of Portland are creative enough to do it this time. You have never done it before. We know what happened in North Northeast Portland and the great sadness of that.
Well, and it appears that this city has a history of every 20 years displacing entire populations of people and calling it progress. And so we have a history of that in Portland. How helpful or non-helpful has the Portland Housing Bureau been in actually trying to address this issue of affordability in East Portland and really getting some focused on East Portland? Because I think that's the, there's always plans about housing, but I'm not quite sure that East Portland is actually included in those plans.
Well, actually, the plans, no. Quite honestly, the five-year strategic plan said they were not going to build new affordable housing in East Portland for the next 5 years. They were not going to assign dollars. And when that report was given to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, the staff person said, when challenged, because we have commission members who understand.
Right.
We have Andre Ba, who's the chair of that commission, Karen Fisher Gray, who's been a great advocate, and we positioned on that position for East Portland, Chris Smith, others who are very strongly understand the situation. When they challenged that, the staff said, well, we will be putting money into repairing existing houses, which we support very much. Mm-hmm. But they said, like, we'll give it lead, lead intervention, prevention. We'll do improvements on houses with lead. Well, actually, the housing stock, multifamily housing stock in East Portland doesn't have lead paint in it. And so there is a learning curve, and we're hoping to work more proactively with the commission. And Jean, do you have more to say?
Well, our measurement is that since East Portland has 25% of Portland's population, we think we should get 25% of the housing dollars from the Portland Housing Bureau. And actually, over the last 5 years, we've been getting far lower than that. And so what we're asking is that we just get a fair share. Mm-hmm. We'd like to get up to that 25% figure. And we need it both in terms of new construction, and we need it for rehabilitation of housing that is substandard.
Because what's happening is we're in second stage displacement. Because quite honestly, as Jean talked about the housing deteriorating, mm-hmm. that's what the first stage of displacement is. And there were very consciously, as I came and looked at people, commercial properties and housing properties, real estate for our housing properties, that were not investing any money in repairing those properties because they knew that in 10 to 15 years, they were going to be demolishing it, turning it over, and making it into condos. So they were making some money now, and they were putting all their profit into buying extra property for a larger footprint.
We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Thomas. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a quick question for you. So I've heard people talk about inclusionary zoning.
Right.
What is that, and would it help prevent displacement?
Thank you. What a great question.
Inclusionary zoning is a process where the people that are developing housing are given some consideration from the cities, usually in terms of greater floor area ratio or a break on the permitting process, in exchange for putting a certain number of housing units for low-income people into the housing that they're building. So it's good for the city in terms of it gets more low-income housing units, and it's a benefit to the developer. They get an advantage. We'd like to see involuntary zoning across Multnomah County, across the city of Portland. It shouldn't be in any one particular area. In fact, involuntary needs to be across the whole state of Oregon. It is a tool where we could get the number of low-income housing units spread across the whole Portland area, not the high concentration that we have in East Portland, but actually every neighborhood of Portland having a number of low-income housing units so that people have a choice about where they want to live.
Thank you. Great explanation. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello?
Hello. Welcome.
Yes. I'm so glad for this program because I was listening to Democracy Now! And hearing about these poor immigrants coming from Africa and filling up the islands, the Greek islands, and a French port city, and God only knows what else stuff like this is happening in the world. I'm so glad you have this program, and it also brings up a painful memory, but I've had a lot since. Of in the early 90s, living in the Rose Apartments transition housing for women, Southeast Portland, and my falling through the cracks and my getting my Social Security disability income. Mm-hmm. And I thank you for listening, and I'm thankful for the program. And my journey is still painful. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. We appreciate the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join the conversation. I'm speaking with Jean DeMasters and
Laura Wintergreen.
And the name just went out of my head. I've only known Laura for the last 30 years, but those senior moments come and go. Thankfully, they go. Good morning, Mike. Welcome to KBOO.
Oh, morning.
Good morning.
I just happened to read somewhere in the paper about a new director or in housing authority there, Kurt Krieger.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I get to know him. He's a decent guy. He reaches out and he listens. And I've actually had just individual connection with them and then been outside of his work and then, socially. And certainly not on his social level or anything like that, but I found out that he was helping someone that was in need. So I talked to him when we were all kind of getting together and helping out.
And Kurt Krieger is going to be the new director of the Portland Housing Bureau.
He came from Vancouver, Washington.
Right, from their housing authority. And the housing authority here in Multnomah County is Home Forward, and Michael Benicourt is the director there. But Kurt will be the director of the Portland Housing Bureau.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think you guys are very lucky, and
I agree.
We lost him. But then again, I'm sure we'll work it out here in Vancouver, Washington as well. But I just want to recommend people to reach out to him directly. And to his office.
Well, thank you.
And East Portland Action Plan members have already scheduled a date to meet with him and the associate director, the person who had been stepping in for
Javier Mena.
Javier Mena. So they already have a plan and have scheduled a meeting.
Very good. Yeah, he's all about conflict resolution too. He'll even put things aside on a shelf for a second. If there's some weird new policy that's
so, can I just say can I just say I appreciate that he's a nice guy, right? But we've had nice men and women in public office and these policy positions for all of my adult life, and
sure.
We still have the problems that we have. So I appreciate that he's a nice guy and he's willing to listen, but we need somebody that's actually willing to actually make things happen and to stand up to policymakers who don't get it, right?
Yeah, so he might be one.
He might be the
team,
one. I will be looking him up. And I'll tell him you sent me. Have a good day. Thank you.
Take care.
You too. And I appreciate that. I mean, it's not like we have evil people who are making decision makers in the city of Portland. And so I just wanted to challenge the fact that because he's a nice guy, somehow we're going to actually get our needs met. I mean, I hope that's so, but I don't think because he's a nice guy it's going to happen. It's going to happen because community members start showing up at his office, starting making phone calls, starting to make demands about making sure that we're protecting our most vulnerable community members.
Well, and with the East Portland Action Plan, what we've learned in other venues where we've had success was also being clear on what you want.
Yes.
Giving people, make the world a better place, make everybody love each other.
Right.
Doesn't work really well.
In the world hunger, right.
Yeah. It doesn't move things forward. So coming together with this list of recommendations, very specific things, the ones we've mentioned, mm-hmm. rent stabilization, just cause eviction, basically inclusionary zoning, housing acquisition rehabilitation to ensure affordability, anti-displacement impact analysis. If public monies are going into a project, they want an analysis of how will that impact displacement mm-hmm. prevention. And they want a commitment to doing an analysis and then to intervening. those are some of the tools. And when we name those specific tools, it allows someone like Kirk Krieger, who's coming into the community, to have direction, to know that this has been vetted by the community. That's why we want people at this meeting on Saturday the 29th. It's vetted. Community members think these tools are useful, and you have the power to apply them.
And we're going to go back to the phone lines. Hello, Leah. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I recently read Eric Sten's article that Steve Doohan, his two articles in The Oregonian, and I was shocked to learn and stunned about Eric Sten's housing policies and the kinds of things he had done. The nonprofit he created to rescue 325 homes from foreclosure. Mm-hmm. This guy had all kinds of ideas that apparently no one wanted to listen to. At the end of the article, Eric, when he was asked why he was leaving, he said, well, one of the things was he wanted to go someplace where he could, felt he could be more effective. And he said the climate of Portland, Multnomah County, is not conducive to affordable housing. So what that says to me is neither the business community nor the political climate is willing to do what's necessary. When I learned that or read that there was $15 million approximately that we would get out here to build 125 houses, I was just outraged. I couldn't believe it. One of the things that we need to address is a different kind of housing, and that's what we're not willing to do. There's a whole bunch of things that the committee is not willing to look at, and those directives, because I've been a part of that. You know, I'm an activist. I've been CAT. I've organized. I'm part of the renters' assemblies, and, you know, and I'm moving out of Portland. I'm going to go live in a yurt. You know, it's like my partner and I had over $200,000 to buy a house out here, and we made offers on numerous houses. And you know what happened? Every single time, they jacked up the price over and over again to the point where we simply said, done, could not afford it. The other thing that needs to be addressed is there were lots of houses that we could have done a minimal amount of repair on, but we were not allowed to do it under the current loan conditions. And that is what was one of the problems, because the out-of-state investors came in, did the repairs, and jacked up the houses. One of the houses over then and off of Prescott is so a little tiny house sold for $250,000. That's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. None of that's sustainable. So there's some real serious work that has to be considered. And spending $15 million to build 125 houses to me is totally off the cliff. It's like no. If I had $15 million, believe me, we need to look at other options. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate your call.
Yeah, I think the caller is right. We need to look at other options for getting the supply of affordable housing to increase much more rapidly and get the cost down. There's no question about that. And I think a number of groups in Portland are really looking at that. We certainly are as the East Portland Action Plan. We know that Multnomah County, for example, is trying to find housing for homeless families, especially veterans. And they're putting an incentive on how do we produce the housing as quickly as possible for as low as a cost. A group called A Home for Everyone is working on how do we get housing dollars out for homeless families to solve the problem of homelessness as well as address this issue of displacement. But there's no way around building housing is an expensive proposition. We don't want to build housing that is substandard. We want to ensure that we meet all of the codes and that low-income families have a safe, decent place to stay, not a place to stay that is really not adequate for them.
And right. I can say back when I worked in North Northeast Portland and some housing went up on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, I was working with the Urban League of Portland, and African American community members would criticize and say, you look in the front door and you can look out the back door. You know, what kind of house is that?
Right.
They're driving us out of our homes and sticking us in these boxes where right. you can see both ways standing in the same place. So I live in a studio apartment. That works for me, but I'm not a family of five. Right. So you do have to look at the needs for housing as well, and both the needs in terms of cultural and ethnic and physical, spatial needs, and safety and health has to be a first requirement. So it is, it's fairly complex, and the cost of building is high.
Right.
And right now we know that people had been looking to East Portland because the land was more affordable. So then if you built on it, that saved the money because the property was more affordable. That's changing. In the last 2 months, commercial properties in the gateway area of East Portland have gone up 10%, we're finding from realtors. And that's in the last 2 months. So again, the inclusionary zoning that says you're making it affordable everywhere in the state, and then also focusing on how do we do it respectfully and responsibly in East Portland so that all community members, I think now they're calling it, are not houseless instead of homeless.
Yes.
They have housing that they can build their home around instead of having to build a home on the side of the street.
I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, Joan. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, this is such a big topic.
It's huge.
It is a national problem.
Yes.
And there used to be something called Californication. Remember that?
Right.
Idea?
Yes. Yes.
Well, it really didn't have to do with people coming from California. It had to do with that gold rush land rape mentality. And I'm seeing it happen here pretty obviously. So it seems to me that the city right now has been planning on building lots of condos for all the people who are supposed to be moving to Portland in the future,
right,
without considering the people who are living here now.
Yes.
And I really think there needs to be some strong legislation, and we need to be looking at things like land trust. This is a progressive community, supposedly, so yes, let's get down to it, because the idea of building lots of overpriced condos for people who will supposedly be moving here from elsewhere, meanwhile, with stagnant wages, we can't afford, you know, there needs to be some laws about it. And I think there could be, if people had the will, laws about what outside investors can do and can't do, because housing should not be seen as an investment.
Right.
Well, and another,
looking at land trust and even land reform at this point.
Another tool that the East Portland Action Plan is recommending is broadening homeownership and cooperative ownership.
But I think the caller is right that this is really a national issue. It's an issue in cities across the whole United States.
That's right.
But it's also a national issue because the funding has to come from the federal government to the states, to the cities. The city of Portland by itself doesn't have enough money to solve this housing problem. We need national support, and every city needs national support to build enough affordable housing.
I guess what I'm referring to is a lot of the condos and things that are already being built. They're springing up like mushrooms.
Yes, they are.
And I think some laws could tie the rents to the wages. That if people can only afford, you know, if the wages are so much, then you can't afford more than that. So the houses, the condos are already being built.
Right.
But the question is, they're not going to be affordable.
Right, and that's the model that the Housing Authority is using. Where the person pays 30% of their income, no matter what their income is, a person pays 30% if they're renting from the housing authority. And that kind of tying rent to wages makes sense especially for very low income families.
There's also our economic development subcommittee is one of the tools they're recommending is living wage provisions, because costs go up. How do we make sure that people's income is elevated? And it's an issue in East Portland. People do not have living wage, family wage jobs in East Portland. And so working, our community has worked on a Gateway Education Economic Development Center with all the school districts in Mount Hood saying, let's start at the K-12 level. Let's introduce and train people in health industry, not CNAs, all forms of health industry and manufacturing. Those are living wage jobs and family wage jobs, and we need to be working on that simultaneously with keeping housing costs down.
Coming up today on NABOO, at 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, host Pear speaks with Michael T. Clare about his article, Big Oil in Retreat. Want to thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you haven't taken the time to become a member yet, just go to kboo.fm, click the tip jar, and become a member just like that. We're going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, April. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you guys are talking about this. I've thought housing has been the biggest issue in Portland for the last 20 years, and I'm glad to hear people finally discussing it. I thought Joan, when she was on the air, was hit it right on the head when she said that Portland seems to be investing in the people they want to attract to Portland.
Yes.
And they're totally leaving behind the people that have been here all their lives.
Yep.
But the reason I called is just kind of with a clarification. My understanding is that the East Portland Action Plan starts at, is it 82nd?
It's when you're at the Clackamas border, it's 82nd to Southeast Division, and then at Division it moves more towards 92nd along I-205, okay. And then it goes all the way to the river, and then it's up to Gresham.
Okay, so I have heard a lot about the East Portland Action Plan, and I know you guys are doing a lot of really, really good work. But my question is, what about the rest of us who are just hanging on by the skin of our teeth in different areas of town? Mm. Are there other groups in other areas of town that are organizing? I mean,
what a great question. And yeah. I would suspect that if you ask policymakers, they would say that you should go to your local neighborhood association, because that's where active people in your neighborhood get together to talk about the issues of the day.
Not always. I've been there. Hey, I've been on the board.
You and me both. Been there, done that, got the t-shirt and coffee mug. Having said that, the people in East Portland came together, quite frankly, out of frustration and desperation, mm-hmm. because we were not on our own able to impact policymakers to the degree that we needed to. And so the first couple of years we were together, I think they pretty much ignored us. Every once in a while, somebody would come to a meeting just to kind of look and see what we were doing. But this was just community members that said, look, we got to do something. This is where we live. This is where we work. This is where we provide services. We've got to do something in this community. And so, maybe you are the person to help start facilitating that in the neighborhood you live in.
Well, and I would say two things. East Portland Action Plan is unique. There is not another one, though the Cully neighborhood was funded as an action plan at the same time. They went in a different direction. You've probably heard of a lot of success in the work that they've done constructively,
right.
But uh-huh. they didn't work with building the community leadership as much as East Portland Action Plan did. We do have to give a nod and an acknowledgement that the city has paid for the staffing, for the operations, and then over half of the money that the East Portland Action Plan gets from the city, they define their budget every year, and over half of the money goes out in grants and municipal partnership projects that gives the money into the hands of getting things done in East Portland. So that's how the group decides to spend their budget. Now, that's extraordinary in and of itself,
right.
that the city gives them money and they decide how to do it and what they advocate for. They make strategic plans every year. You're right. There is not another one in the city of Portland. This is exceptional. But there are things. Someone mentioned earlier, the Renters Assembly. There's Welcome Home, which is working on housing. Jean, you must know about
several of the
groups.
Right, and there's community action agencies in every part of Multnomah County, Neighborhood House, Friendly House, Impact Northwest, Human Solutions. There's many community action agencies. But I think we're looking at the East Portland Action Plan because East Portland has the highest number of low-income children. And we're trying to make our community better. We're trying to ensure that low-income children have a chance to grow up and meet their dreams, just like other kids have a chance to achieve their dreams. And if you have such a high concentration of children in poverty, you just know that you have to do something. You have to put more resources in to turn that situation around. And that's what's happening with the East Portland Action Plan.
And when Jean said the wanting fair share from the Housing Bureau, that's not even dealing with the equity of the high numbers of low-income people, and actually the high numbers because of the economics of racism of people of color.
Right.
And so East Portland has those densities, and it is the last bastion. There's a border there that is no longer Portland. So when they're driven out of there, they're driven out of Portland.
Okay. So what I'm wondering is, what I actually meet with this, I go to city meetings, and I have for the last several years, and so I'm aware they help fund these things. But I guess what I'm saying is, how did you get it started?
It actually started as a plan that the Planning and Sustainability Commission did with the East Portland community. They made a plan. There's 269 items in that plan for action for improving East Portland. And there's a value statement that said they value it for the community that exists in East Portland. Not that they don't value it for new people, but that's how it started.
So I'm going to recommend that, Laura, that you leave your contact information, because we only have about three more minutes left, and we're not going to be able to tell you the whole process about how it started in that time period. So if you'd be kind enough to give your name and phone number to my engineer, I will pass it on to Laura and ask her to give you a call later today.
Okay, that sounds great.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You
now,
too.
I want to make sure that people know again that there is an event coming up on Saturday, August 29th. It is the East Portland Action Plan Involuntary Displacement Prevention Action Toolkit for East Portland. And the goal is to come check out the toolkit. Tell us what works. Tell us what doesn't work. Tell us what else you'd like to see in the toolkit, and figure out how you can be involved and engaged in helping with this really severe issue. So we'll be at David Douglas High School starting at 10 a.m. at 1001 Southeast 135th Avenue. Do you want to say something else about it?
I think just the last thing we want to say is that the East Portland Action Plan, we have about 20 different ideas of how we might reduce involuntary displacement, and we need input from people who live in East Portland and live throughout the city to say which of those ideas are good ones, which one do we prioritize, which ones are not so good. And so we're really looking for input from this session on Saturday the 29th, from people to say they want this, they don't want that. Their input on Saturday will help us determine which ideas we go forward with.
And this is a lens of prevention. This is a lens of how do you prevent it in East Portland. East Portland is at a different stage of displacement than other parts of the city. Mm-hmm. So it is the group that has been working on these proposals is really doing it with a lens of what do we need to do within the next 5 to 10 years to prevent displacement. Very different than in inner north, northeast, where you are looking at right to return. And that is what needs to happen in that part of town. We're asking those people who come to this meeting, keep that lens of what do we need to prevent displacement in East Portland in the next 5 to 10 years.
Excellent. We're going to try to squeak in this last caller. Good morning, Barry. Welcome to KBOO. Oh, looks like we missed you. Well, I also want to make sure that folks know that you did talk about the grant. We have a 2016 Civic Engagement Grant that's due October 1st. You can get the application from the EPAP office. And the EPAP office, do you want to?
You can pick up a hard copy at our office at 1017 Northeast 117th Avenue. That's between Gleason and Halsey. It's at the foot of a water tower that says Hazelwood. Or you can go online, and just if you go online to www.eastportlandactionplan.org/grants, we have the grant there, the application. We're doing support meetings. People can submit their grant in any language. Because I make no decisions about the grant funds, Joanne Hardesty does. She's on the Grants Review Committee, she and others.
I just won.
And so they make the decision. So I get to work with you if you need help in filling out the application. People come to our office. We have a computer. They draft things. They run it past me. It goes back and forth. We turn in the application in any language. We have it translated. So please do look at this. This is for civic engagement, and specifically it's to support this application is to encourage civic engagement in under-supported race and ethnic culturally specific communities with language appropriate communication.
But that's within East Portland. It's not citywide. It's just within East Portland.
Exactly. And that they hold sacrosanct. That is a requirement.
Yes, that's the number one checkoff, right? Is it in East Portland? I want to thank you, Gene DeMasters. I'm going to miss you. Gene is retiring at the end of the month. I can't believe we're not going to have Gene DeMasters around. It has been an honor to work with you. You are absolutely fabulous. Thank you for your work. And even as she's headed into retirement, she's still advocating for the needs of people in our community. And Laura Wintergreen, is always a pleasure having you. I've never had you on, but having you here and talking with you, you have also been a very strong supporter of the community volunteers with East Portland Action Plan. And quite frankly, we would not be where we are if we didn't have your capable leadership pushing us along.
Thank you, Joanne. Thank you very much for inviting us.
It has been our pleasure. We will post information again on the Facebook and website page. I am Joanne Hardesty. Spin Voices from the Edge. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Thanks, Steve. Have a great day, folks. Bye now.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station, at a minute now before 9 o'clock. Coming up this morning at 9:30, join us for Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering speaks with Michael T. Clare about his article, Big Oil in Retreat, which argues that the dynamics of the energy industry may be changing in a way that could sink Canada's vast tar sands enterprise in a sea of red ink. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with guest host Kevin Pina, the American Psychological Association response to allegations of providing cover for the CIA's torture program, and Flashpoints continues coverage of Haiti amid the continuing controversy surrounding parliamentary elections. At 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman speaks with local poet and critic David Beispiel about his collection of essays, A Long High Whistle. That is all coming up this morning after Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch with news you're not supposed to know. Stick around, that's next on KBOO.
Happy National Radio Day from KBOO in Portland, Oregon. KBOO is an independent, member-supported, volunteer-powered community radio station. KBOO embodies social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. Thank you for celebrating National Radio Day by listening to local radio.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids.